Welcome to Motivated to Lead Podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim.
Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. We've had some great guests over the last few years. If you're new to our podcast, I encourage you to go back and listen to some of our previous episodes. And this week, we're happy to have join us Damon Limby. Damon is the CEO of Learnit, a global training company, and he's been in that role for over three decades. And they have upskilled over 1.8 million individuals in the workplace. And he has learned a number of lessons that he outlines in his book, The Learn It All Leader. And he also does keynotes on leadership, entrepreneurship, and lifelong learning. Looking forward to today's conversation with Damon. It's great to have Damon joining us for our conversation. I appreciate you taking time out of your week to talk to us.
Mark, it's an honor to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I love hearing people's stories. It's, I think, one of my favorite things about doing these podcasts is hearing how people have gotten to where they are today. And for our listeners, can you give us a little, just an overview of your career and kind of how you've gotten to where you are today?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Damon Limby, and I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. By the time I was a sophomore in high school, it was all about sports. All my friends were athletes, you know, baseball, basketball, football. And I decided if I was going to play college sports, it had to be baseball as my ticket, college or professional. So I went all in on baseball, and it worked out pretty well for me. I was a high school All-American my senior year, and I got my first big choice, first big decision. Do I go pro? I got drafted by the Atlanta Braves. Okay. Do I go pro, or I had a full ride to Pepperdine University? And Mark, my parents were awesome. They were like, okay, this is your journey. We'll get behind you any direction you want to go. And I chose the college route and to go to Pepperdine. And it was one of my first real lessons in leadership. And that was, I chose college because our coach, Andy Lopez, Pepperdine is a small 2,500-person university. And when I went on my recruiting trip, Coach Lopez said, we're going to win the College World Series within 2 years. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do it by having a team that plays together, strong pitching, and good middle of lineup hitting. It was very clear and direct what he wanted to do. And so I was all in. I turned down the offer to go to the Braves. I went to Pepperdine. Long story short, I kind of got hurt. I had some imposter syndrome. Happy to talk about any of that. Had a transfer out. There was no NIL portal. There was no transfer portal like they have now. Sure. And so I had to go to a junior college for a year. Played for another Hall of Fame baseball coach there, Andy Lopez. I ended up at Arizona State. I hit a home run in the College World Series playing there, which is my glory days. And by the way, the year I left Pepperdine, I forgot to mention, they won the College World Series. So it shows you, you could set moonshot goals if you get everybody buying in. You can make them happen. And that's what they did at Pepperdine. I go to the College World Series. I hit a home run in the College World Series. It's the draft. There's no internet back then. I'm waiting for my phone call. My roommate got picked up by the Giants in the first round. 10 other guys on my team got drafted. My call never came. So essentially, my baseball career came to an end at 22. I struggled quite a bit with identity. You know, who am I? And I've always been a baseball player. Are any of these skills even transferable? And I wasn't sure. So I was lucky, though. I came from a family that had a real estate company, a hotel chain, even a Chinese restaurant. But my dad was also starting this small computer training company that he wanted to help learn how to use Excel to digitize his portfolio. So I started as a receptionist at Learnit 30 years ago in June of 1995. Wow. I taught classes after answering more phone calls than anybody. I did sales. 5 years into it, I applied for the CEO role when the gentleman who was running the business at the time wasn't, he was kind of on his way out. And here I am, 30 years later. There's been a lot that's happened ever since, but that's a quick recap of how I've gotten here.
Yeah. Well, like most people, you probably couldn't imagine the journey that took you to where you are today. And it's fun to hear your story. Talk a little bit about, you've got a book that you've written, which I always love when people actually, everybody has a book inside them, and most people don't get it out on paper, the hard part of it. But talk a lot about the book. It's called Learn It All Leader. It sounds like it aligns with what you're doing in your work as far as at your organization. But talk a little bit about that and kind of what was your purpose for writing the book.
So I think you bring up a good point. I think all of us have a book inside of us, and I was really fortunate to have my wife kind of push me into doing it, and which came out in April of 2023. And at the time, I thought I was going to write about my family and San Francisco and our history, but as I started sitting down, I put it together around my leadership journey, Learn It, and what I've learned over the years. And what really inspired me to write the book was, first and foremost, I've been able to see behind the curtains of a lot of great organizations that we've worked with, and I've seen great leadership and maybe not so great leadership. So I share a lot of stories in there. Number two is I've been surrounded with great employees and team members and built great teams. And most of the success is what we've been able to accomplish together. As well as, look, I can never in my life imagine that I would end up in the learning field in my life. I went to Arizona State. My focus was on baseball, and I don't have a degree from Harvard Business School or anything like that. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I wanted to write a book that could help individuals realize that through putting in the hard work, the intentionality, and going for things, and being curious, that you can raise up to a level and be a great leader, whatever a leader looks like for you. And the third final reason, though, Mark, is I wanted people to understand my father's impact. I mean, he was my idol. He was a big businessman, but he was also a great father. And I lost him in 2010 to cancer at only 62 years old. And I got two little kids, a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old. And it's kind of a legacy thing. I want them to see not just my dad, but also the impact my mom had and what it's like to have great parents and for them to lead by example. And what Learn It has been able to do over the years. I mean, we've helped upskill. We're a live learning platform that has helped upskill over 2 million people. So we've had a lot of impact. And so my book talks about my journey, talks about the 3 Hall of Fame baseball coaches I played for. The first half of the book is about being, you know, mindset, what I think a Learn It All mindset is. And the second half of the book is about doing. And it's practical advice on how to be a better coach, how to lead through difficult times. And I even have a story in there for your music fan about having a party decision-making for Guns N' Roses. And so just tell some of my stories, and I share a lot of the things that employees that I've, team members I've had. And yeah, that's about it.
Well, tell me one of the favorite stories that you share in the book. I want everybody to pick up a copy, but what's one of the stories? And maybe it's the one you just mentioned, but give us a little sample.
One of my favorite stories that's top of mind, I just spoke to a woman yesterday, is when Learn It first started, we were a computer training company. And as we started to evolve, it was really one of our biggest clients at the time, still today, is Gap. We trained thousands of their employees, especially headquarter employees. And they wanted a time management class or difficult conversations class. And we didn't do it at the time. But they said it'd be great to just have one, you know, holistic training provider. And so we started dabbling in that area. So for 4 or 5 years, we started doing time management classes and everything, but people still looked at us as a computer training company. It was hard to get that out of their mindset. And I had this woman named Jennifer Albrecht, who was a fantastic instructor for us. And then she left after a couple of years to go work at a local high school. She came back and she took over our soft skills department. I hate that term, soft skills, but really that's what it was. And Jennifer was late 20s, cute, bubbly, but she kind of suffered with the limiting beliefs or imposter syndrome that this industry was for white men who are in their 60s who work at IBM for 30, 40 years, and that we could never be taken serious in this field. But Jen and I were at a conference at the Ritz-Carlton at Pentagon City. It was one of my best conferences ever. It was around, you know, leadership experience. And throughout the event, they had all these great instructors, but they'd always call Jennifer up to help participate over the week. And one day, Mark, her and I were walking around Pentagon City outside, and she turned to me and she said, "I'm as good or better than any of these guys out there. And we can really do this." And so that like set us on a path. This was probably like 2005, where things just really elevated after that when it comes to the soft skills world that we do around leadership and coaching. And that was a big deal. And that's one of my favorite stories, because again, it's kind of like an underdog story. Right. And it was great to see her eyes light up. I always knew she had it in her, and I would try to tell her, but she was able to see it for herself. And she had such a wonderful impact for about 15, 16 years at Learn It. And I'm excited to see her at our 30-year anniversary party in a couple weeks.
Okay. Very cool. So talk about the imposter syndrome. I think a lot of our listeners are either first-time leaders or first-time CEOs. And a lot of times getting the title, you know, they think, okay, now I need to know everything, and I don't feel like, I hope I'm not discovered. I don't know much of, you know, anything to lead. And I'm sure you can probably think back to when you got the title CEO, kind of that feeling that you have. But how does somebody work through that?
I think you bring up a great point. You know, somebody goes from individual contributor, they get brought on as a new leader, and they might be thinking behind the scenes, why me? Or am I even capable? Or is anybody going to even listen to me? Well, my first point for all your listeners out there is that's not, you don't have to worry about it. Somebody believed in you. They put you in this role, so you belong there. That's first and foremost. When it comes to imposter syndrome, I'm glad you brought it up. It's actually something I talk a lot about in my book. And I developed this four-step framework. And I did it when I was playing baseball, because when I left Pepperdine, I had a lot of imposter syndrome. And when I got to Arizona State, you know, this was really my last chance to play in a major school like this. A lot of people told me I shouldn't go there because there'd be 17 guys trying out for first base. But I'm like, this is my last chance. I'm going to go all in. I'm going to forget about the imposter syndrome. And my four-step process was, number one is to look at, what are you afraid of? You know, for me at the time is, if I don't make the team, what's the worst case scenario? If you're a first-time leader or whatever it is that you're concerned about, that you have an imposter syndrome over, fast forward a year, if things don't work out for you, is it something you can overcome? If it is, then label it. You know, label what your fear is. So that's number one. And once you realize that you can overcome it, great. Step number two is work hard. Put in the effort. There's no hacks that will get you there quicker than just hard work. And also, when you're working hard, it prevents your mind from being too worried about things. You know, it forgets that anxiety. So label your fear, work hard. Number three, which I think is very important, is deliberate practice. In baseball, at the time, I really struggled with hitting curveballs. So I'd be the first guy on the field, last guy to leave, and I'd hit 1,000 curveballs a day. I'd have the batting practice pitcher threw it to me. When I got better at that, I moved on to something else. But being very deliberate with your practice. As a keynote speaker, I had a hard time with transitions. So I just focus on that. So get better at something and then move on to and learn something else. Super important. And then finally, step four is learn and let go. So as you're a new leader or you're stepping into the batter's box, or let's say you're giving a speech, once you step on into the batter's box or onto the stage, stop thinking about technique and everything. Just understand you put in all this work, all this effort, and just give it your best shot. You know, and you might knock it out of the park, you might fall flat on your face, but either way, it's going to be a great learning opportunity for you. And you should also give yourself a little bit of a pat on the back, because there's so many people who pass up opportunities. They pass up that leadership role, or they pass up trying out for a team or whatever it is they're doing, because they're afraid of failure. So once you're able to just get comfortable with failure and understand that, hey, you know what, I'm taking a chance, I'm doing this, there's always learning opportunities there. So that's just my recommendation, four-step process that I've used throughout my career on how to overcome imposter syndrome. Last thing I'll say, we all have imposter syndrome. We all have our limiting beliefs and even our self-doubts. Anybody who says they don't, they're either a narcissist, which is typical, or they're just lying to themselves. Right. So it's okay to have that, but nothing's ever going to happen for you if you sit back. You got to take action and move forward.
Yeah, I was talking to a very accomplished executive a while back, and that was one of the things she said. She said, everybody thinks I have it all put together, but inside I deal with the same insecurities and I've accomplished a lot, but there's still that little voice that sometimes pops up. It's like, well, you really don't know what you're doing. And I think that's something people deal with always. I think those are some great points. So there's a difference between a learn-it-all leader versus a know-it-all leader. Talk a little bit about that, just, you know, that kind of that mindset, you know, changing to I need to learn more versus knowing it all.
Yeah, it's interesting. You just brought up a senior leader who's had a lot of success. A lot of times senior leaders get to the point where they figure, like, I've hit my pinnacle or my peak. I don't really need to learn anything else. Well, the greatest leaders that I've gotten to know, whether it's on my own podcast, the Learn It All podcast, or just through my network, are the leaders who are humble and curious and always want to learn and evolve. And I'm sure you've seen them. I know you're one yourself, and it's so critical. The difference is a know-it-all. That, you know, you have all the answers, you have it all figured out. I have this one gentleman in mind who I know. He runs a 500-person organization, and it's a yes organization. So everybody has to, you know, go along with whatever he thinks is best. And there's no growth opportunities there. You know, that company, you're stacking yourself up for stacking the odds against yourself there. And people aren't going to come to the table with ideas because they know that they're just going to fall on deaf ears. And the difference is a learn-it-all is somebody who, similar to growth mindset, but you know, that they're curious, they're open-minded, they're okay with being wrong. They understand that other people have strengths that they don't, and they're going to tap into those strengths in those areas. And they're not afraid to take chances. Things are going to happen. You're going to learn and you're going to keep moving forward. So, I mean, that's really what I look at as a difference between a learn-it-all and a know-it-all. And as you evolve in your career, I think it's more important than ever to maintain that mentality and that approach instead of thinking like, okay, I've got it all figured out because all my success that I've had.
Yeah, great. Great advice. So having that, developing a learning culture within your organization, what are some things that people can do as far as leaders to promote that within your organization?
So first and foremost, I think having a learning culture is critical these days because of the rapid pace of change. I mean, there's always a lot of change going on, but now with AI and everything else, the rate of change is accelerating like it's never been before. And if you want to have a learning culture, you have to model the behavior from the top. And I think it modeling the behavior as a leader is just so important in whatever you do. But how you go about it is you model it from the top, and then you get some champions on your team who are, and I'm not just talking necessarily about formal learning, you know, I'm talking about there's in the moment learning, there's mentoring, there's everything. But you get some champions on your team who want to set up learning programs, and they go out and they either do it internally or externally. They get curious and they find out what are the skills that people need to be super successful and find ways to develop programs like that, that's just one step of the process. The main step is you have to have the psychological safety within your organization for people to try and fail. That's really what a learning culture is. The formal training is a nice piece, but if people are out trying things and things aren't working and they're getting coached up on how to do it better and differently, that's where the growth really happens. And people are going to come up with ideas that can help evolve your organization. They're going to be humble enough to say, look, I don't have all the answers. And Mark, one of the most important things out there for leaders and anybody is that people are going to get better at receiving feedback. There's a lot of talk about giving feedback, but I think great organizations have leaders and people throughout the organization who can receive feedback. They don't get defensive. They're open to hear what other people have to say. because feedback really is, I believe, the fuel for growth. And it gives you the opportunity to keep moving forward and learning on part of your journey. So to me, that's really what it takes to what a learning culture looks like and how to get there. Combination of, you know, training and learning that way, but also having that organization with the psychological safety that allows people to try almost like a sandbox for themselves. Mm.
Yeah, no, I think there's no worse feeling not knowing how to do something and then feeling like if I screw up at all, I'm going to be chastised. Somebody's going to look at me differently. And so that's kind of that culture of try it and get better. Versus, you know, I think that that is a constraint as far as for employees. So as you've looked back over people, you've had some key people in your life. You mentioned your dad. You mentioned others, your mom, that were influential as far as in kind of shaping who you are. Have you looked to mentors as far as to do formal mentors in your life, or kind of how have you approached that, and do you still have people in your life that they're kind of your board that is an informal board that help you as far as making decisions when you're trying to decide what to do?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned my mom and dad. I mean, I also learned a great deal from those baseball coaches and other leaders. But yes, I have a group of individuals that I go to that I can tap into who I consider mentors. It's kind of funny. I go to this place called Canyon Ranch, which is in Tucson, and it's almost like it's a health spa. But from going there over the last 20 years, I've had access to some of the most successful people in the world. They all have similar mindsets around health and well-being. They're typically A-type personalities who go there to rewind. And over 30 of them came to our wedding back in 2015. But especially since my father passed away, whenever I have a big business decision, whether it's trying to make an acquisition or going in a different direction, I always tap into them. And I think that it's important too, that even though they might be 15, 20 years older than me, that I got to add some value back to the relationship as well. Sure. And as a mentor. So it's not a one-way street where I'm always asking them for something. I'm always trying to find a way where I can help them with something in return. And when I get their advice from them, Mark, I'll send them a note or a text and thank them for it, you know? And because of that, they're always willing to pick up my phone call. And what I love the most about this group, mostly men, but they just shoot it to me straight. You know, there's no fluff about it. They give it to me straight. They tell me when they think that I'm doing well physically or, you know, cause sometimes they'll show up at Canyon Ranch and maybe be a little out of shape and like, hey, you got to get yourself back in shape. But they're always open to giving me advice and, ideas around business as well. So that's kind of like my go-to group. But I also, from this podcasting world over the last couple of years, I've made a great network of individuals, who I could also tap into for advice, which has been super helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are you most excited about as you think about leadership and just some of the trends that are going on as far as in the world? But what are some opportunities that you see for leaders?
Well, I think right now is a difficult time to be a leader. We have five different generations in the workforce. We have a lot of uncertainty in the market. And we have what's going on with AI. And there's a lot of uncertainty and even fear around that. I'm most excited about the opportunities that AI brings, to be completely honest. I look at it, especially as a smaller organization like LearnIt. You know, we have 30, 40 employees and probably 60 part-time people who do work for us. But a small organization like that, if we leverage AI internally, it helps democratize us going up against these larger companies. We don't need a 50-person marketing company. We don't need in-house counsel. You know, we can really streamline things and make us more efficient, but more importantly, use AI to tap into strategic things, you know, help challenge your assumptions, help build new products. So I'm really excited about it internally, but more so on our product side, where we're a live learning organization. You know, we do classes over Zoom or even in person, but we're building AI habit coaches and other products that will help make our learning stickier. So you go through training, you go through a feedback class, let's say take our, you know, use our model. And then you have a difficult conversation coming up. By the end of this year, we'll have a voice activated AI coach that will help you role play through that. And so I'm really excited about those advancements in technology. But it's also, I think as an entrepreneur or business leader, you're always a little nervous about, or a lot nervous about, who could disrupt you? What else is possible out there? So I'm always excited about how Learner can grow and evolve. And at the end of the day, what I get the most passion out of is the team I have and the fact that we really help build leaders of next generations. And that's something I take great pride in.
Yeah, that's great. So I'm sure you continue to learn and develop. Mm-hmm. Any books that you would put on a leader's reading list that come to mind that you're either read recently or in the past?
I mean, I look at your bookshelf in the back. I mean, I've got a bunch of them. One book that I highly recommend, it's Team Arrivals by Doris Keynes Goodwin, I think is her name. And what I love about it, real quickly, is it's about Abraham Lincoln and how he brought in for his cabinet a bunch of people who thought completely different than him, a totally diverse team. A lot of them hated him. But he knew if they were going to get through the Civil War and everything, that he had to have different outlooks and opinions. And it's just a great book about a leader who's being vulnerable and who made some mistakes, but also learned to adapt. Another book I love, I think decision-making is critically important as a leader. McKinsey study said that 40% of our time as leaders is spent making decisions. Decisive by the Heath Brothers is my favorite decision-making book. I think it's awesome. And I'm a big fan right now of Keith Ferrazzi's book, Never Lead Alone, where he talks about teamship and it's elevating everybody through your organization. And then finally, a book I've read multiple times, and right now is a good time to read it, is Ryan Holiday's Obstacle is the Way. And it's just a great, easy to read book about people who had to work within a lot of constraints and inspiring stories of how people made it through those constraints. So those are top of mind. You know, for all you listeners out there, especially if you're new to leadership, if there's one recommendation I have for you around books, read a lot of biographies. You could learn, whether they're military biographies, whether they're world leaders, you can learn the successes, their failures. I always tell new leaders, go out and read 10 biographies just to get started.
So what do you do to recharge kind of when you're not working?
Well, one thing I want to say about what you're saying about reading books, I think it's really important to quit books if you're not reading them. Yep. I also think, number two, is I think it's okay to read them not in start to finish. Sometimes just read a chapter if there's something that sticks with you. And number three, which I think is really important, I've changed. I used to try to read 50, 60 books a year. But a gentleman named David Katz once told me that learning without doing is treason. So it's more important to read less books, maybe read it over again, and apply something. And I think that's so important, is when I'm reading a book now, I'm thinking about how could I leverage this and use this in my personal life or professional life. So I've cut down drastically the number of books I read, and I try to get more out of them by applying some of the lessons.
Yeah, no, I think that's important. I think it's kind of like not enjoying the journey part of it, of just rushing through to get to your destination and finishing the book and checking it off, you know, which I like doing that just because that's kind of how I'm motivated to get the next thing done. But yeah, you're right. If you're not applying it, you're not learning and growing and stretching. So that's
and probably to answer your question about what do I do to recharge, probably the reason why I read less books these days is because I got a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old, and they keep you quite busy as well. So that's, I don't know if I would say that they help me recharge, but you know, I love spending time with them. You know, to get away from work, I love my job, which is, you know, I think if you have a career and it's not something you enjoy doing on a regular basis, you got to figure out and pivot. I love my job, but I also, outside of work, I love live music, and I'm a big movie guy. I mean, I went and saw the new John Wick movie, Ballerina, by myself the other night. So something to take your mind off it. And I even read a lot of fiction because I think that there's benefit in that too. So those are some things I do to recharge. Got to get better at going to the gym and doing more physical type activity, but I think I'm all right for right now.
Okay. Yeah. The fiction part of it, I've got to add some fiction. I'm just nonfiction is kind of where I tend to go. And somebody challenged me a while back. They said, you can actually learn a lot by reading
you
fiction.
Can. And, you can.
So
Mark, you should. I mean, I think you can, helps you think critically, problem solving. And a lot of people think that it's a waste of time reading fiction. I just disagree. I think that there is a lot of value in it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's fun to mix it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. My wife, you know, a lot of times she looks at what I'm reading. She's like, how can you spend time reading a book like that? You know, like, well, I can't help myself. Tell the audience, encourage them to pick up your book, but tell them as far as kind of how to find out more about you and definitely your podcast. I'd love to have them check that out too.
Yeah, well, Mark's going to come on my podcast, and it's called the Learn It All Podcast. I've been doing it for a couple of years. I've brought on a bunch of great leaders, and I think we have good conversations. So check that out. Connect with me on LinkedIn, Damon Lemby. And my book is The Learn It All Leader. You can find it on Amazon or anywhere else. And finally, my organization is Learn It, learnit.com.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, I appreciate you coming on. And it's great to have somebody who podcasts because your audio is great. and your lighting is good too. So,
well, hopefully my answers are
good. The answers were the best part of it.
No, you asked great questions, so I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, it's been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed it. And wish you continued success in all you're doing.
Thanks, Mark. Same to you.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.